Buenas noches. Oh, you there?
Is it me you're looking for?
You cut off there halfway through that. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, I never cut off. I was pausing because I forgot the lyrics and I didn't know if I was going to sing the Adele or Lionel Richie song, so...
Or starting with Hello, maybe a song that you shouldn't sing when it comes to Rangers Football Club.
Do you want to take the lead on both the games and I'll cover all the other shite?
I've got it here, not a problem.
Oh, and I'll just interject in and out as I normally do.
Yeah, I didn't want to know, but you got in and out.
Listen, if I only got the chance to do that these days, Dave.
Again, nay sympathy. Nay sympathy.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Well.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Hi everyone and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
Derek, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here. I'm tired, but... You know, we've got this to do as usual.
You make it sound as if it's a chore, Derek.
Just speaking to you, it always is, Dave.
And it has been for years and that'll never change.
No. Well, we've got two games to cover, obviously, because one of them was postponed, which we'll get into. So a bit of a mixed bag and all in all, Dave. Bit of disappointment, but we've got to be proud with the way we played anyway. But we will get into that. So we'll go down the tunnel and onto the park. So, in a slight change to proceedings, Dave is going to take the lead on both the games because he done the post-matches for them, and I'll cover the rest of the stuff. So, Dave, take it away.
Yep, first match we've got to cover was when we took on Hibs at Easter Road in the Scottish Cup quarter final. Now, coming off that fantastic result away against Benfica, the 2-2 draw, we knew that the squad was getting a bit thin. And also, we know that the manager likes to change things up a bit, but I think he was more forced, wasn't he, to keep the same 11 just due to the amount of injuries that we've got. So it was the same team that took on Benfica the previous Thursday night. So it was Butland in goal, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Rydvan, Lundstrom, Diomande, Lawrence, Sterling, Silva and Dessers on the bench, McCrory, Matondo, Ruth, Davies, Balogun, Barisic, Raskin, McCausland and McKinnon. So, like I said, we were full of confidence after the great result that we'd had a few days earlier in Lisbon. So, the game started off and Rangers did start brightly, forcing two corners within the first 4 minutes. But, Derek, as corners, I mean, I've been trying to rack my brain and think of any goals that we've actually scored from corners this season. Now, there's bound to be one or two. None of us are springing to mind, and we just seem to force so many corners during the game, but they usually never come to any. So again, it was pretty wasteful in this game and the game that we're about to get into as well. But two corners in the first 4 minutes, which basically came to nothing. And then in the 8th minute, Connor Goldson in defence, and he hits one of his trademark long diagonal balls into the box to Silva. But it was just out of reach for him, really unlucky, and Hibs managed to clear. 13th minute, good play down the left by Rydvan. He puts it across to the near post. Dessers, he gets on the end of it, but he just can't get it on target and hits his shot past the post. So a decent chance there, but couldn't get that on target, unfortunately. 14th minute, Silva on the left-hand side. He runs at the defence, puts in a great ball across the face of the goal. No takers whatsoever. Fantastic ball in again. And I just had a feeling at that point that it was going to be a frustrating night for us. Thankfully, in the end, it wasn't. So, but 16th minute, though, a bit of a let-off for Rangers because Butland, and he receives a back pass. How could you describe it, Derek? Did he get tangled in his feet or does he think he's got more time than what he does? Because he doesn't seem to be able to clear it. It's right in front of his goal line. Hibs player races through. Slide tackles he still can't get the ball under control and manages just to clip it past his post and out for a corner. So, you know, we don't usually see calamitous moments like that for Jack Butland, Derek. So, you know, we'll certainly give him the benefit of the doubt. But a bit of a scare there, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think he was trying to play the sweeper keeper. It kind of kept up with the poor distribution from the game against Benfica there. He was just off it that night in terms of his distribution. Started off again the same here. I don't actually think it passed the post. I think it clipped the side of the post and then out for that. So, yeah, living dangerously at that point.
Yep, but back on the front foot, and it was Dessers. He wins the ball on the left wing. He keeps a hold of the ball, runs diagonally into the box, turns his man beautifully, but the shot straight at Marshall. Good save by Marshall, but out for the corner, expecting. You know, he did all the hard work there, Derek, and into the box. And, you know, if it had just been slightly left or right of Marshall, he would have scored, but it wasn't to be. But only a minute later, penalty to Rangers on the 21st minute, and it's Sterling. He receives the ball from Tav into the box. Hibs player just barges right through him, Derek. There's no doubt whatsoever, regardless what Michael Stewart was going on about, who was an absolute disgrace all game in the commentary box. It was as clear a penalty as you could get. Clumsy play by the Hibs player. Barges right in to Sterling, knocks him over. Clear penalty in my eye, and I'll take it was the same for you, Derek.
Yeah, I mean, there was no attempt to play with the ball. It wasn't malicious. I think it was just more clumsy. And Dave, I'm more surprised at taking you only 5 minutes to mention Michael Stewart.
Trust me, that'll come. So in the 22nd minute, Tav steps up, shoots. Marshall actually pulls off quite a good save. The ball bounces back out, and good play by John Lundstrom. He was rushing in and manages to bundle the ball home. So great reaction play by Lundstrom there to get the ball into the goal and Rangers to go 1-0 up. Fantastic time for us to score in the 22nd minute, and you know, feeling really confident from there.
Happy with that?
Yep, definitely. 26th minute, Tav receives the ball on the right wing into Sterling on the overlap into the box. He controls it and hits a great shot on the half volley and a good save by Marshall in a way. So that would have been a fantastic goal. Like I said, Sterling playing very well in that sort of right wing, right midfield role, linking up great with Tav as well. So really unlucky there. But then I've just mentioned his name, having a great game. Major setback for us on the 32nd minute. Sterling, he's running back into the box and you can just see him pulling up, clutching his hamstring. He goes down. It's never a good sight. It's never a good thing when they're clutching their hamstring like that, Derek. It didn't look as if he'd done anything either. Really, he goes down, and in the 33rd minute, he had to come off and he was substituted and McCausland was brought on. So big blow for us at that stage. So, but then there was a lengthy stoppage in the 38th minute. There was a head knock to Martin Boyle. John Souter was involved as well. Thankfully, he got up, but Martin Boyle had to be stretchered off. So because of that lengthy play, there was 9 minutes of additional time to be played. So the game went on after that, and 5 minutes into stoppage time, Dio Mandy with a long-range shot which just dips over the bar, just inches over the bar. And then just a minute later, Silva, he makes space inside the box, gets to the byline, cuts the ball across. Really, really dangerous. Hibs with a last-ditch clearance, gets the ball away, still 1-0 to Rangers. And then just before the half-time whistle, Dio Mandy with a curled cross into the box. Dessers leaves it right in front of goal, thinking that he must be offside, and he wasn't. And the ball sneaks past the post. Replay showed that Dessers was onside. Now, Derek, we know when it comes to Dessers and offside, vast majority of time he does go to the offside position numerous times a game, and I think he must have thought there, but it turns out that it wasn't. So he could have got his shot away on that stage, but it didn't count. So half-time, 1-0 to Rangers. Playing some pretty decent stuff, but I have to say, Hibs still looking quite dangerous on the break, but all in all, Rangers in control of the first half.
Got to be happy with the first half performance. Just on the Martin Boyle thing, it was a bit of an innocuous challenge as well for both players. There was nothing in it, and the absolute moon howlers out there saying that we almost killed them. I mean, for God's sake, Dave. I mean, I'm glad he's okay. It was nobody's fault. It was just one of these things. It was just a clash. He came off the worst of it. But for to come away with that nonsense, Dave, it kind of set the tone for what was the fallout for the rest of the game, didn't it?
I think I actually saw or heard possibly on one of the radio phone-ins, a fan describing Suter as taking Boyle's head off, which I don't actually know how that was possible when you actually seen the challenge. But no, as you say, there wasn't much in it. He did have to go off. It was a lengthy stoppage there for Boyle, but it looks as if everything's going to be okay, and we're happy with that. But as you say, overreactions. But Derek, I'm really, this season, especially the last few months, the slightest thing that happens when it comes to Rangers, there is an uproar on social media, and I am trying my best not to get drawn into it, because I've been listening to it for so long now that it's starting to become water off a duck's back to me. But there you go. But anyway, into the second half, 50th minute, Hibs, you know, really had to come out and try and do something. Some early pressure with a corner on the right. Lundstrom heads off the line and out for another corner. From that, Hibs get the shot off, but Butland saves and out for another corner, but thankfully nothing came to that. 52nd minute, Hibs player Obita, he completely takes Lawrence out as he was on the break. Quite clearly a yellow card, and this is significant, the reason that I've put that in there. 54th minute, it's kind of end-to-end stuff. Hibs are pressing. The ball cleared up to Silva. He spreads it on the left wing. Crossed the ball back from Dessers, back to Silva, to McCausland on the overlap. Great play. He puts in a low cross, but it's cleared out for the corner. One of the actual best moves of the game there. Great one-touch stuff. Everybody up front getting involved. Really unfortunate that nothing came of that there. Then in the 55th minute, Tav, he receives the ball on the outside of the box and lets fly with a low shot, and it's saved by Marshall out from the corner. But again, corner comes to nothing at all. And this is, for me, it's starting to get quite frustrating now that we are forcing all these corners in games and we're not doing anything with them. 59th minute, Hibs with a free kick outside the box. It curls past the wall. A great save by Butland and away. So still showing that Hibs were causing us some problems. But then 62nd minute, another injury blow for Rangers. The man that had came on to replace Sterling, Ross McCausland, he has to come off injured, and he was only recently back from injury there. So really, we're not having much luck whatsoever when it comes to the injuries. Matondo came on. 65th minute, another sub, Dessers came on, and Derek had a few chances, but pretty quiet in the game. Kamar Roof, he came on. 66th minute, though, Roof had only just been on. He gets booked. No idea. He goes in for the challenge. Doesn't look like there's any contact whatsoever. I don't know if you got a look at that one or not, Derek, but certainly didn't look as if there was anything in it. Certainly didn't look as if it was meriting a yellow card. You have any idea about that one?
It just wasn't a yellow card. Yeah, it was a foul, but it wasn't a yellow card. I think you're missing a big thing here, though, Dave, is the fact that the guy who got booked for Hibs in the first place, as McCausland was coming off, he wasn't just dilly-dallying, he was coming off with the aid of our physio, and the Hibs guy comes up and tries, pushes them off to try and get them off quicker. I mean, the referee lost the plot at that point. He should have been booked for that alone. That would have gave him a second yellow card. Why he never, I have no idea. He shouldn't be laying hands on another player coming off, and he shouldn't be putting his hands on a physio of an opposition team either. Dave, the referee had lost it. And yeah, I think that just leads into the whole Roof thing as well.
Yeah, well, as I say, and talking about that, because only 2 minutes after that, the same player, Obita, he gets sent off for his second yellow card for a sort of late challenge on Matondo. Now, it was off the ball. Derek, there wasn't much in it, but there was still contact. It was still off the ball. But again, the uproar from certain people, including Michael Stewart again, who was going absolutely off his head at this stage. To me, it was a foul. It was off the ball. The referee saw it. As you pointed out just a few minutes ago with that, maybe the referee had seen enough and, you know, maybe thought persistent foul, and I'm not sure. There wasn't a lot in it, but it was still a foul. The referee gave the second yellow card and Hibs were down to 10 men. What did you think of that?
I mean, it was a certainly justified yellow card. As I said, he should have been off a few minutes beforehand anyway for another yellow card offence. Don't forget that he was the one who gave away the penalty as well.
Yeah,
I think the referee even said to the captain, get him to calm down, because at this point, everything was starting to boil over. And it all stemmed from that McCausland incident where he laid his hands on our physio and McCausland as he was coming off. The referee lost control at that point. And for Hibs fans, even Celtic fans jumping on saying that that was a disgrace of a red card, no, it was clearly a second yellow offence. Just, I don't understand why the issue was, apart from the fact it was benefiting Rangers.
Yep. And again, another mental part of the game was just to come up there, because it was an absolutely shocking two-footed challenge on John Lundstrom by a Hibs player. The referee, rightly in my eyes, shows the straight red card. It did go to VAR for review. I realise all of these things have got to go to VAR, but it did take quite some time for it to, you know, to go. But to me, that was as clear a red card as you could possibly get. It was dangerous, it was reckless, and quite rightly, Hibs were down to nine men. But again, the uproar, especially again from Michael Stewart, who I've mentioned about four times now, was absolutely disgraceful for a commentator in this match. To me, it was a clear red card all day, Derek. It was endangering the opponent, it was reckless, and quite rightly, it was a red card. To me, I take it you're in full agreement with that.
100%. It was a two-footed, out-of-control lunge, and he was off the ground when he done it as well. Yes, his studs never connected with the player, but the rest of his body ended up connecting with the player. And it's probably just as well his studs never, because it would have been a leg breaker. And I think that's how some idiot pundits and some fans were taking it. Oh, he should have broke his legs, you know, that should have, that's the only way to justify a straight red there. And no, it was completely out of control. Clement used afterwards saying, no, you can't do that, it's reckless. And people are trying to use semantics, the fact that, oh no, well, reckless in the rule book means it's only a yellow card. No, he never meant that. He meant just reckless in the general sense. It was reckless, not on a technicality. He meant it was out of control. And you've got to remember, English is not his first language, so for you to try and justify not giving a red card because he said reckless, fucking nonsense as usual, Dave. Again, all down to the fact that it's Rangers that benefit from this. Hibs had lost their head at that point, and again, it all stems back from the referee losing control.
As I say, I'm going to get into, when the game finishes, some of the other stuff that's came out after this game, but getting back into the game, 79th minute, you know, Rangers really piling on the pressure now, as you would expect, playing against nine men, still only 1-0 at this stage. Matondo on the right-hand side, he puts in a great cross. It falls for Dio Mandy, but he can't get his shot on target and out for a goal kick to Hibs. 80th minute, subs Raskin and Cole McKinnon on, Dio Mandy and Lawrence off. And then on the 84th minute, Rangers finally get the second goal to kill the game off. And it was Lundstrom with the ball on the outside of the box. He plays it to Silva on the edge of the box, takes it in, checks back to beat his man and fires it low under Marshall to make it 2-0. Really good move, really good finish, Derek, and that was game over at that stage, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit disappointing it taking us that long to score the second goal, but you know what happens when teams go to 10 men, they go to 9 men, they batten down the hatches, and that's what ultimately Hibs done.
Yep, but a few more chances after that. 89th minute, a ball into the box, and Raskin, one of the smallest players on the park, with the header, but a good save by Marshall. And then at the stoppage time, a free kick to Rangers on the edge of the box after Tav was brought down. He hits the ball, it comes back to Tav. He hits it, it sort of falls for Silva and rolls it to McKinnon. McKinnon shows great presence on the ball, runs through, fires it past Marshall, but it was offside, and it was clear offside when we look back on it. Absolutely no complaints there, but really unfortunate for the youngster coming on. That would have been a dream goal for him to score for the team for the first time. So that was the final score after that. Rangers winning 2-0 and on to Hampden into the semi-finals. And at this stage of the game, I've got to play either Celtic, Aberdeen, or the winner of Morton and Hearts. But we now know, as you'll be getting into shortly, Derek, we have drawn Hearts to play in the semi-finals at Hampden. So, as I say, delighted with the victory, because it was a tricky tie, because Hibs had been starting to get some performances and results together. So really pleased that we were through to the next round. But again, I'm going back to, and I keep going on about it, I think a lot of the uproar, Derek, a lot of it has stemmed from the absolutely diabolical commentating of Michael Stewart, who basically went absolutely ballistic at every single decision that Rangers got during this game, blowing it all out of proportion. The man was an absolute disgrace. I honestly don't know how he can be allowed to commentate on any of your games, to be honest with you, because he cannot hide his dislike or his hatred for us. It's unbelievable. And every clear-cut decision that was given to us, he was making out as if there'd been this huge injustice done to Hibs and everything was favouring Rangers. And I know there's been a lot of fallout, Derek, as we've spoke about. I think a lot of that has been fuelled by him and his commentary. It was absolutely shocking. I know that you didn't hear it. You were listening to RTV. And we go on a lot about Tom Miller, but my God, Derek, I would take Tom Miller any day over having to listen to Michael Stewart in a game. But I know that you've saw some of the fallout, but it really, really was that diabolical stuff. It really was.
I've heard some of the clips, and it was just a case of, you know, don't back down, double down. Even when Rory Hamilton was actually explaining to him the rules, it was like, that can't be the case. Just because he doesn't like the rule doesn't mean that you can just ignore them. The guy is a first-class weapon. He's not even that clever to do what Chris Boyd and Chris Sutton do and deliberately antagonise people. The guy is just an absolute tube. This is what Viaplay have got as their commentator, and they think it basically is a Wish version of Chris Sutton. He's an absolute clown of the highest order, and he's a failure. That's the best there.
It is an embarrassment for a broadcaster to have their commentator have him as a co-commentator and the commentator having to explain the rules to him. Just exactly what you said. When have you ever heard anything like that? That shows you how bad it is and how embarrassing it is as well. And the worrying thing is he'll still be on the airwaves. That's the worrying thing. But I just thought, really embarrassing at that stage, just like you pointed out there, Derek. But like I say, delighted that we were through. Disappointing that we'd picked up another two injuries, because we've already been hit hard by injuries already this season and going into the next game that I'm about to go into, which was potentially our biggest game of the season so far, and that was at home to Benfica in the Europa League, trying to get a victory to get us through to the quarterfinals of the Europa League. And we knew it was going to be a tough one, Derek, didn't we?
Certainly, that's what we signed up for.
So again, because of injuries, it was basically, there was only one change that was made from the game that started on Sunday. So the lineup that Philip Clement put out was Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter and Ridvan, Lundstrom, Diomande, Lawrence, Wright, Silva and Besser. So Scott Wright coming in there. As I say, we are struggling in the wide areas at the moment. On the bench, McCrory, Cantwell, the return of Cantwell into the squad, Matondo, Ruth, Davies, Barisic, King, Raskin, McCausland did make the bench, Yefleko, Fraser and McKinnon. So the opening 5 minutes of the game, quite a few misplaced passes. Derek, I don't know if that was coming down to nerves, if it was coming down to fatigue. I was expecting us to be a bit more cautious just in the opening sort of 5 minutes, but we're giving the ball away quite a few times. And then a sort of mad 3 minutes of play starting in the 10th minute. So it was great pressing play by Rangers deep into the Benfica half. Diomande, he wins the ball out to Silva. He gets into the box and then the ball over to Wright. He's at the byline, finds Diomande again, but the ball's cleared. Really, really good move. But it was end to end because Benfica then pick up the ball, pile on the pressure. They come all the way down into the Rangers box. It's cleared to the halfway line. One back by Lawrence. Great 1-2. Lawrence picks the ball back up in the edge of the box, hits his shot, fumbled by the goalkeeper and out for a corner. So it was one of these games you couldn't take your eye off the game. It was end-to-end stuff. From that corner, Benfica then clear. They break up to the edge of the Rangers box and shoot it, thankfully, straight into the hands of Jack Butland. So a wee bit concerned. Benfica were breaking against us pretty easily at that stage and had a couple of chances already. 17th minute, great play by Wright. He gets the ball from Tavernier, beats his man into the box, cross and deflected out for a corner. Good play there by Scott Wright. 25th minute, and so some more good play by Wright again. Onto Tav on the right wing. He puts the cross into the box to Dessers. It's headed clear by the Benfica defender out for the corner, but again, corner comes to nothing. 31st minute, Benfica race down the right wing, cross in. It's cleared only as far as one of the players on the edge of the box. It's a sort of half-cross shot and the attacker gets on the end of it with a header. Thankfully, it's past the post. 32nd minute, good build-up play. Silva to Lawrence, over to Dessers, then on to Wright. He takes a shot, but just over the bar. So Scott Wright, Derek, getting involved in a hell of a lot of the attacking play. And, you know, once we saw him on the in the starting lineup, he's not entirely had any minutes for us at all, but certainly was causing a lot of problems and playing well. So really unlucky with that one. And then 36 minute, another let off for Rangers as Lundstrom, he takes a heavy touch. The ball is out to Di Maria on the left wing. He puts a low cross right in front of the goal. It deflects, thankfully, out for the corner. So it's one thing, I think, Derek, to be broken down by top quality teams, but when we're giving the ball away and that's giving them the chances, that's the sort of worrying thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been doing that quite a bit in this game.
Yeah, I know. 38th minute, great break again. I'll mention him again. Right, he beats his man for pace, gets to the edge of the box to Lawrence. First time to Dessers, he shoots, but it's saved and out. But Dessers was offside in any chance, but a very good move regardless. So that was it at half-time. So 0-0, good press and play by Rangers, lacking in composure in the final third. That was a common thread for the whole of the game. Benfica looked a quality team though, Derek. We knew that. They were breaking very, very well against us, creating chances. So we knew we were going to have to be tight. We knew that we couldn't make any mistakes. And just like what you said there, we had a lot of misplaced passes in that first half. But like I said, 0-0 at half-time. 48th minute, though, into second half. Dio Mandy to right in the middle of the pitch. He runs at the defence, ball into Dessers. He shoots and deflects wide for a corner. But again, nothing comes of the corner. 51st minute, Tav with a cross on the right to Dessers. But the Benfica defender, he heads it just past his own post and out for the corner. Dessers was complaining his shirt was pulled, Derek, and certainly on the replay, I think he might have had a case there because he was certainly had his hands all over him. I don't know if it's a wee bit 50-50. Dessers maybe had his hands on him as well, but it certainly looked as if he had a good grip of his shirt, and we've seen penalties been given before for that. Did you have a look at that one?
It wasn't a penalty, Dave. It was 50-50 at best. They were both at it. Not every shirt grab will result in a penalty, especially if you're doing it back to the other player as well. So
54th minute, good play into the box. The ball falls for Dio Mandy at an angle. He shoots, but saved by the keeper. Really unlucky there. But again, Benfica on the break. They're about to go clear through. Conor Goldson pulls the player back and he's shown a yellow card. I think he was just taking one for the team there more than it being anything else because he knew that they were going to be through on goal if he hadn't have done that. And then the 63rd minute, at this stage, Derek, is when I knew Benfica were upping a gear and we were toiling. Dio Mandy gives the ball away on the left wing. Now, he's on the Rangers' left wing. We're attacking at this stage. Gives the ball away, and it was a promising attack as well, and Benfica break at such pace. The ball is cut into the box at the back post, but thankfully, a weak shot by the on-rushing attacker straight into the arms of Jack Butland. That could quite easily have been 1-0 to Benfica, but the inevitable did happen 3 minutes later when Benfica did score, and it was again a corner to Rangers. The ball is held up in the box. It just doesn't seem to fall for us. It gets cleared upfield. Benfica player, he races clear. Nobody can get near him. Takes it one-on-one with Jack Butland and fires it past him into the back of the net. And instantly, as soon as the ball went up, the linesman put his flag up. We thought we were saved, but a lengthy VAR check showed that when the ball was cleared, it was headed on to the Benfica attacker from the Benfica half. The player was onside and they went 1-0 up, Derek, and it had been coming, hadn't it?
I think there's three things about the goal, or maybe four things about the goal. You had seen it coming. We were starting to get very leggy and no subs were made again at that stage. You could see it a mile away, there was changes needed. And you've seen that in the first leg as well. Yeah. And arguably that cost us for the OG goal. It cost us again. The third thing is the fact that the corners, once again, we are so pathetic at corners. Generally playing outswingers to absolutely nobody. If they beat their first man, they don't go any further forward and they never find our man. And the fourth thing is the fact that we were basically playing with all our players in their half. We were leaving absolutely nobody back. We were sitting so high up. We were doing it all throughout the first half. It nearly caught us a few times. McCoist was going doing his dinger about it, saying it was ludicrous that we were doing that. The point is, I can see the merit in doing it in the first half when the legs were fairly fresh, because that two-man advantage, effectively, with not dropping players that far back at a corner might benefit us. But you don't do it into the 60th minute of a game when you've had a lot of runner games, when your players are clearly leggy and you were still doing it. It was a mistake waiting to happen. It just so happened that Dio Mandy made that mistake. They did get a bit fortunate on the offside. I mean, you were talking there was probably about a half a foot in it, but we were caught with it, and that all stems from a shitty corner, leggy players, and still continuing to put too many players forward when we were taking a corner.
Yeah, and again, it was our corner. That's the thing. It's not as if it was a free kick to them, or, you know, the ball was with them. It was us, a very poor corner. They were able to clear the ball very quickly to one of their players, and that's how, you know, the ball was played up and we were punished for it. So, no, 100% there, Derek. And you're talking about subs. A double sub was made a couple of minutes after that. 73rd minute, Wright and Lawrence off, Matondo and Cantwell on. And then 4 minutes later, Dessers off, Roof on. But Benfica looked comfortable at that stage. They were playing the ball with more confidence since they scored the goal, playing the ball about. 82nd minute, they had another chance. The ball switched from left to right into the box. A shot, great save by Butland, and out for the corner. 86th minute, another sub, Dio Mandy off, Raskin on. 87th minute, Yilmaz with a cross into the box, headed to Tav at the back of the penalty area. A low ball to Lundstrom in the edge of the box, who shoots straight at the keeper. That was the chance. When that happened, we didn't get a goal from it. It was great play. I knew that that was time up for us, because we hadn't made that many clear-cut chances in the second half, and it was great play. Really, really unlucky there. So in the 90th minute, 5 minutes of added time, we had one sort of half chance in the 93rd minute where Silva gets into the box. He holds up play, but he stalls and the ball's nicked away from him. Gets to as far as Cantwell. He shoots the ball past the post. So unlucky there, but Cantwell, I think the Silva could have possibly have done better there. He just seemed to stall and stall and stall instead of trying to get a shot off it or make the pass. So that was it, Derek. Full time European football over for another season. It was a good performance against a quality team, but fine margins have showed that when Benfica had the chance, they took it. We couldn't do that. There was plenty of grit and determination, like I said before, but lack of top quality, I think, in the final third showed for us in the game. We just didn't seem to look as if we had the quality to break them down, you know, big time and get in there to score the goal. That was my feelings on it as well, Derek. But the players did look leggy, as you say, and, you know, we were running out of steam. I think after that first leg, the 2-2 game, we were all buoyant from that result. And I think a lot of us thought that, you know, we were going to go through, and we got told stories that Benfica didn't travel well and stuff like that. But I thought they were a quality team, Derek, and they took their chances and we didn't. That's just basically how the game ended for me.
It's been a big story of our season, not taking chances. I think we've gone backwards in the last, you know, maybe five or six games, where we're still looking for this perfect angle. Certainly at this level, you need to be any sort of sniff, just shooting. You never know what will happen. Just shoot. And there was one chance when I think you highlighted it with Dessers as well, where he did get a big chance and he shot and it skiffed off the outside of the leg of the defender and out for a corner. And do you know what? It annoyed me because he had the chance to just shoot first time, but no, he wanted to switch it. And I think he got very lucky with the shot, because I think it was going wide anyway. Just the defender got in the way and put it out for the corner. Why he needed to switch it, I don't know. Just shoot on sight. And that's what we've been guilty of the last wee while, including domestically.
Yeah, definitely.
But Dave, I'm not too disheartened. It was a good campaign, finished top of the group, you know, especially considering everything that's happened this season, the manager change, the way we've played, been great in the last wee while in the competition. Given the fact that we're still going for the league, it's still all to play for. Disappointing to go out I'm not too disheartened. It was a well-fought campaign. Got to be proud of them. We'll just need to wait and see what happens in the rest of the season.
Yeah, 100%. Yep, it was hard going, but we had some fantastic results along the way. A couple of dodgy ones as well in the group stages, but just delighted that we did manage to finish top of the group stage and put on a very good show against Benfica, but wasn't to be.
So, the next game, what was meant to be, it should have been Sunday the 17th of March away against Dundee. However, as we all know, it was called off with an hour and a half to go as the pitch was absolutely atrocious. The local ref inspected it at 9:15 and then he wanted Don Robertson, who was going to be the match referee, to inspect it at 10:15, who eventually called it off. He gave an unusual interview to Sky afterwards to say the reasons and confirmed that there was no bounce in parts and there was a lot of sand in other places, which was dangerous. I've since found out from a referee at my work that, you know, they are allowed to come out and give interviews for decisions like this, just not in-game decisions, which is absolutely bizarre. Clement was clearly raging, as was Sky, since it appears they have forced the SPFL's hand into holding an investigation into it. You know, Dave, one-offs due to the weather can happen. However, this is the fourth time this season a game has been called off at Dens Park due to the pitch condition. The Dundee CEO has basically came out after the game and said, oh, well, it was the weather. No, you absolute plum. A junior game in a council field short distance away the same day went ahead and you couldn't get your pitch into it up to scratch. You know, one time it can happen. Two times, come on, right? Three times and it's embarrassment, but the fourth time in the one season is absolute negligence. I mean, people were trying to justify it. People were trying to claim a conspiracy because, oh, we were leggy and we needed the rest and we got a better chance of bringing players back. No, that's just fucking nonsense. I mean, the thing about the pitch, what did they do to the pitch the first time it happened? Nothing. What did they do the second time it happened? Absolutely nothing. What did they do the third time it happened? Absolutely nothing. What did they do when it was raining on the Saturday? Absolutely nothing. What did they do when they knew it was going to be still raining on the Sunday? Absolutely nothing. Dundee done nothing. And I think the fact that they laid off their ground staff as well about 6 weeks beforehand goes to show they've done absolutely nothing. Dave, I don't want the 3 points. You can't just give us the 3 points because of that. That's not the way it works. But the SPFL need to severely come down and sanction Dundee for this one. It should be a prerequisite that you have a pitch in a viable playing condition. That should be one of the first prerequisites of being in the top league. And sadly, too many teams get away with it. You know, we spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on our pitch. We can arguably afford it, okay? But we want to have one of the best playing surfaces. These other clubs just don't care. Maybe part of it is the fact that Dundee are going for another stadium and they don't want to put the money into the Dens Park as it is now. That's not the point, Dave. It needs to be maintained.
I've heard a lot of people. There's actually been a lot of groundsmen from much smaller clubs, even amateur level out there, Derek, who said that they would have went about things so much differently. They haven't had any issues whatsoever. And it was the only game in the whole of the United Kingdom, I think, that got called off because of weather. So that, I mean, that just tells you something there. The other bit that I think that I find absolutely incredible is that nobody knew anything about this until the Rangers kit man turned up early at the stadium. And he got whiff and had a look and saw the state of the pitch and contacted everyone else at Rangers to say, I think we've got a problem here. So if that hadn't have happened, God knows when they would have found out that the game wasn't going to go ahead. It's been a complete shambles from start to finish. Quite rightly, Dundee do need to be sanctioned. There's need to be they need to review everything they do when it comes to their pitch. You know, I'm just going to repeat everything that you said, Derek, but four times in the one season is incredible. And like I said there, the only game in the United Kingdom to get called off because there was some rain. And it wasn't even the fact that it was torrential rain that went on for days and days and days, Derek, was it? It's just the fact that the pitch is an absolute shambles. It's obviously not getting prepared properly. And this is now the fourth time that it's happened. So there definitely needs to be, there is an investigation going, like what you said, but something has to be done about that. I think even the Dundee manager, you could see that he was physically annoyed about it as well in his interview also, Derek, because Dundee had been playing some good stuff. They'd got a great victory against Aberdeen, so they were desperate to play the game as well. I don't see it as being anything that Dundee FC, the team themselves, that they would have wanted this game off either. I think it's been solely down to the preparation of the pitch here and the people that take care of it. It's just an absolute state, and that falls to the owners of the club and the people at the high levels of the club there as well. So something definitely needs to be done about this.
I mean, a journalist piped up and says, well, in Holland, that the teams that are in Europe give 3.75% of their European revenue to the other clubs in their leagues so that they can fund the maintenance of pitches. Maybe that's something that we need to look into in Scotland. But Dave, no, why should we? The other clubs already get a percentage of European income that we make. So when we do well in Europe, they get more money. We already give them that. We're already over, because we do well better in the league than them, we already pay more for the upkeep of VAR, which is another story altogether. But again, we already give them money. So why should we continually, and I'm not just saying we, I mean in Celtic, why should Celtic Rangers, the teams in who get European football, fund the other clubs that can't even, you know, do the basics of ground maintenance? It is just absolutely farcical in this league. It again stems from the governance, the fact that they haven't clamped down on this. They've not got set rules, or apparently they do, but they're not enforced when it comes to pitch maintenance. And then again, it all stems down to the shitty, poor TV deal that they got, and they all agreed to. But again, clubs like Dundee accepted that because they're so wanting the pittance that they get from that they're so desperate for it, they're willing to accept anything. So it all runs down back to the governance of the game.
Yep, 100%. It's a culmination of things. Dundee will blame it on the cost. The cost then comes back to how poor the deal is presently that we've got, which we've all been talking about for so long. But Dundee have got previous for various things to do with votes, investigations, and the governance of the game in Scotland. You know, we could be here talking all night about that, but it was embarrassing. That's what it was. It was embarrassing for Scottish football. It was embarrassing for Dundee, and very, very amateurish, in my opinion.
So, the league table, we've played 29, won 23, drawn 1, lost 5, scored 64, conceded 16, goal difference plus 48, and we're on 70 points. Celtic obviously won their game at the weekend, so we're sitting 1 and 2nd, 1 point behind them. We've got the same goal difference, obviously, we've got that game in hand. The games to come, Saturday the 30th of March, that's at home against Hibs in the Premiership, that's a 1500 kickoff. Sunday the 7th of April, that's at home against Celtic in the Premiership, that's a midday kickoff. Then we've got the rearranged game, which has just been announced today, Wednesday the 10th of April, away against Dundee in the Premiership at 8 p.m. kickoff. Dave, that's better than what it could have been sandwiched in between the Hibs and Celtic game, but again, a game that should have been at the weekend, there's on a Wednesday night. So
yeah, I know, and personally, Derek, if we had went and got the victory against Dundee, we would have been feeling a lot better, I think, going into the game against Celtic. It has given us more time to try and recover and get players back, but I would have rather had the points on the board before we go into that game than anything else. So a lot of people saying that it's benefiting us, a lot of people saying it isn't benefiting us. I personally would have preferred to have played the game then, try and get the 3 points and, you know, be top of the league going into that match, but we can't do anything about that now.
Next game after that is Sunday the 10th of April, away against Ross County in the Premiership. That's a midday kickoff. And then on Sunday the 21st of April, we're at Hampden against Hearts in the Scottish Cup semi-final. That's a 3 p.m. kickoff. The SFA had actually arranged it a day before we played Benfica there, so they were thinking about us for a change to give us the Sunday game rather than the Saturday, because that could have been pretty awkward there. But unfortunately, we're not in that position where we needed that extra day, but we'll take it nonetheless. Yeah. But again, it's going to be a ripped-up pitch from Celtic playing there the day before.
Yes, yeah, it will be. It will be a hard game, as you say. But I'm hoping by that stage that we're getting some of our players back. They've been out for quite some time, Derek, because the squad is pretty bare at the moment with the amount of injuries we've got. So fingers crossed that we will get quite a few of our players back and they'll be fit for these games, because there are some massive games in there for us.
So we'll go now into the news. So a few things to cover as usual. Firstly, reports suggest that Borna Barisic is set to sign for Trabzonspor in the summer. He's out of contract, obviously, in the summer. There were rumours that he was going to sign a contract extension. However, at age 31, he's been here 6 years. His form is iffy at best right now. I think it's time to say thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's been on the cards a wee while now, especially with the resurgence of, or not say resurgence, but the form that Ridvan has shown since the manager has came in, Derek. I think he's been excellent. Borna's not been able to get back in the team. A few appearances here, a few injuries. But, you know, he has been a good servant to us, Derek, and it puts to bed all these rumours, like you said, that he was going to get another contract. So we wish him all the best. If that is what happens, but I think it's, you know, the best move for both parties here.
Next one here is we have been invited to play in a pre-season friendly against Manchester United at Murrayfield. If you remember, I think it was last season or the season before, there was a number of English teams playing at Murrayfield in friendlies. Yep. Turns out it's our turn this time. Saturday the 20th of July, tickets on sale at Ticketmaster. Season ticket holders and MyGers holders were given access to a pre-sale today. Dave, I think you had a look at some of the tickets and they're extortionate, weren't they?
The tickets... Derek, if you want to sit up in the gods, and we know how big that Murrayfield is, so it's going to be right at the very back, or starting at about £42, and that is for the sort of worst seats you can get. And then they jump up to about 60 odd, and then they jump up to almost 80 right up, and you can get them right up to about £90 each. So it's very expensive for a pre-season friendly. I realise it will be a big occasion because it's at Murrayfield and we as Rangers fans will want to go and cheer our team on. But I think just the fact that it's not going through the club, which I don't, you know, it can't because it is at Murrayfield that they're getting sold by Ticketmaster. So there's always fees added on there as well. I just think it's very, very, very steep. But no doubt it will be a full house, Derek. I've got no doubts about that as well. But for me, I am in two minds whether or not I should go, just for the fact that it is at Murrayfield and I missed out the last time that we played there when we played Hearts a few seasons ago in the league when Hearts were using the stadium. So I'm in two minds at the moment whether I'm going to go or not, but I'll have to make my mind up soon before it goes into general sale. So I think I'll make my mind up tomorrow if I'm going or not.
On that note, it's likely that there'll be little or no pre-season games will be played at Ibrox for the next few seasons, obviously due to the work that's going to be done in the stadium. So obviously that was a 3-year plan. It could only be done during the off-season. So I think we'll be not getting any big glamour ties at Ibrox during the off-season. But that's a small price to pay for upgrading the stadium.
Yeah.
Next thing here, according to a report, the Premiership clubs will vote next month on whether or not to scrap artificial pitches for the Premiership. There's been a suggestion it could be in place for next season as well, if the vote goes through. Kelly have obviously already committed into changing it. I think they were basing it on if they were getting a training pitch built or something like that. But, you know, it can only be a good thing because ultimately they're not great for the gaming.
No.
You know. But playing devil's advocate, that game against Dundee probably would have went ahead if they had an artificial pitch.
I know it's, you know, I think, you know, the vast majority of us and the players all want to see the game getting played on grass. That's, you know, an absolute no-brainer. Me and you have spoken about it before. I can see the reason why, you know, some of the, you know, smaller clubs out there who are looking for extra money because they can hire the pitches out every single night to various teams and stuff like that to use. It is a lot of money when you've got the artificial pitch there. But for a top flight league, Derek, it's another thing I think that pushes us backwards is the plastic pitches in the top league. So no, I welcome it with open arms.
Next thing here, Zach Lovelace, he was making his comeback from injury. has got injured again. Just after the last pod, he was playing in a B-team game against Royal Antwerp. He now faces up to 2 months out. I mean, once again with injuries, Dave, yep. If we didn't have bad luck, we would have no luck.
Exactly. It just seems to be one after the other. And a guy that did show a lot of promise when he came into the team as well, and unfortunately hasn't had the opportunity to come back because of injuries. So again, we just hope that, this time he gets a clean bill of health and he's back to full fitness soon. But that is a big blow for him.
Next thing, the Davy Cooper statue in Hamilton has hit the headlines due to it being in a poor state of repair. It's currently sitting outside a sports complex in Hamilton, which is obviously his birthplace. The plaque has rubbed off. The statue's base is looking pretty grotty. The statue itself needs a cleaned up. There's been calls for the council to do something about it, and the suggestions of a fund being started as well from Rangers fans to get it sorted. I mean, it's a poor show from the council. I know that budgets have been cut right, left and centre. It wouldn't take much time or money to get things to scratch. It's just a poor state for the fact that of one of the town's most celebrated sons, it's meant to be a tribute to him, and you've left it get to that state. Poor show.
It is, Derek. I think you'll find that if nothing happens, there will be something put in place by members of the public, you know, Rangers or Motherwell fans or whatever out there to try and get something done for it. But definitely needs to be restored to its former glory, 100%.
That'll be a late night job by temporarily stealing the plaque, I think, of it to get it up to speed. So next thing here, on the back of threatening to cut the Old Firm allocations, Hibs have confirmed this is what they're doing. Conveniently, they've done this the day after the game against us and cited abhorrent behaviour from us. I think it was ultimately to hide from their own indiscipline the night before. Granted, there were some songs that shouldn't have been sung by our away fans. We'll hold our hands up and we'll admit there are some things that go on within our own fan base that shouldn't. This is one of them. The away fans have been a bit of a bugbear of mine for a while, especially when it comes to songs. But again, it's just songs. Once again, we have had our players being targets of things being thrown. This time it was vapes thrown at one of our players as well by the Hibs support. I mean, Hibs have stated that they've been in talks with the SFA and raised the topic of strict liability again. Oh, look, Dave, a squirrel.
It's quite incredible because, as you say, all that gets thrown in our faces is the fact that there's certain songs getting sung, and then you look at the actual physical evidence that's came for the Hibs fans, even in recent matches. What happened, we spoke about it in the last podcast about what was thrown at Lauren Shankland, and then again, as you say, objects being thrown when we were playing against them also. There is a theme that happens all the time. It's with the same set of supporters all the time, but as usual, it's deflected back onto our fans there. And like you said, Derek, certain songs that shouldn't be sung. But there's a difference between singing a song and actually getting a missile of some sort thrown at you as well. It's a complete, absolute disgrace that Hibs, the hierarchy there, are saying that. And we know that it's aimed towards us. They will say that it'll be against other supporters as well, but it's aimed to us. We know that, but it doesn't surprise me. Again, it's constant, and it's just the theme appearing. We don't get any other issues like that when we play anywhere else. It's always when that happens. We've also seen loads of damage done to seating areas and stuff like that, you know, in our stadium also. So it's sheer double standards there, I think, by Hibs more than anything else.
I mean, just on the strict liability thing, I'll give you a scenario, Dave, and you might think it's far-fetched, but I'll give you the reason why it's not in a minute. I go to a Hibs game and sit in the home end. I mean, there's going to be plenty of seats, so I'll be able to do it for a start. But I cause issues and I throw something onto the pitch that misses a player just miraculously. I don't get caught. Who gets the blame for that? Yes, Hibs get the blame for that. Who gets the punishment? Hibs do. Who do I support? Rangers. Did I go there just to cause trouble for Hibs? Yes. See how that works? And believe me, the whole point is we have the bunker nuts in this country that will turn up to games and do that without a question. I mean, we've just seen a female Celtic fan posing on Twitter pictures of herself at the Benfica game at Ibrox. So it's not that far-fetched when you've got idiots like that do that. I mean, Dave, Scottish football is full of sanctimonious pricks who are hating themselves to death. I accept our fans are no angels at times, but no fan base in the world never does anything wrong. And that is the reason why no club will ever vote for this, as they then realise that their own fans will end up costing them. I'm fed up with this faux outcry about big bad Rangers. It's tiresome, Dave. I mean, a Hibs Supporters Association even had the cheek to publish a letter that apparently they sent to their club and the SFA. I'm not even going to dignify it by reading it out, but it was full of bullshit, and yet conveniently it fails to mention their own rap sheet of late. I mean, the reason why nothing gets sorted in this country is it's one-sided bullshit that fails to acknowledge the issues on their own side as well, because it's always deemed as big bad Rangers. Yep. It's not about whataboutery, it's about fairness. Like the decisions by referees on the pitch, we don't ask for special treatment, we ask for fair treatment. And the attitude of most non-Rangers fans can be summed up by a quote from the disgraced former First Minister: Rangers Football Club could have done more. That's the attitude we get all the time, Dave.
Yep, 100%. And it's been like that for quite some time now, Derek. Even more so, it seems to have been magnified since we've started to creep back up and start to come back, you know, start to be more successful. It has escalated from there. It's an absolute joke, but we've seen it time and time again. But when it's coming from the government, not just the people running Scottish football, what chance have we got?
Anyway, we'll park that there, because that will run for a wee bit.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, next thing here. Prior to our game with Benfica, UEFA were apparently worried that us and Liverpool could make the final. not because of any trouble, which I had obviously my fears about as well, but because of the capacity for accommodation and fan zones. I mean, we had 250,000 fans went to Manchester, apparently 150,000 to Seville. You can assume that the similar would happen to Dublin if we got there. Then if you add in Liverpool to the final, obviously that's no longer an issue. We're out now. But after years of treating the Europa League as the ugly stepsister to the Champions League, hopefully UEFA are now realising that they need to make the final a bit more upscale. I mean, look at Seville for a start. When they first planned it, I mean, the stadium is poor. That's before you get into the issues with the stewards and the police there. But there was obviously issues because the stadium was only about 30,000 fans. They never had any proper fan zone set up. There had to be an outcry from Rangers and their fans to set that up. UEFA never treated it with the respect it should have been treated with.
Definitely not. And it was quite true what you said there. It was seen as, because it wasn't the Champions League, that surely there can't be a lot of people that are interested in that. But when you get teams dropping out of the Champions League, big teams with huge supports like Liverpool, and then you get a fan base like ours, which is absolutely massive, and we see that as being, you know, a huge, huge occasion, like it was when we got to the final in Seville. I think, you know, these UEFA are getting their eyes open to things like that. So exactly like you said there, here's hoping that in the future things are going to be a hell of a lot better organised, better venues, bigger venues as well, so the fans can get in as well. Because that was another thing. Even although the stadium looks fantastic in Dublin, the capacity of the stadium isn't that big. It's no one of the sort of 70,000-80,000 all-seater stadiums out there. So that was another concern that was put out also. But here's hoping now that that's when they start to look at it and try and get things organised a lot better.
Next thing here, keeping on the European theme, because we've went out, our automatic Champions League group stage spot is now in doubt for the year after next. The Czech Republic are 11th in the coefficient and they are just behind Scotland. Victoria Plzeň are only need to draw in one of the last in the quarterfinal ties in the Conference League, and that'll put the Czechs ahead of us on the coefficient points. I mean, they've had three teams in Europe just around, just past there. We had us and that was it.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, the fact that they've got teams getting far into Europe kind of says it all. Once again, it was all down to really us.
Yes.
I mean, Celtic fans laughing at us going out of Europe and going out against Benfica are the dumbest fucks about. They really are. Because they wouldn't have even made the Champions League if it wasn't for our exploits in Europe. Pundits have now even admitted it's our exploits alone that have been the reason why Scotland have done well in the coefficient tables of late. So this could have a major impact on Celtic and their coffers as well. So, you know, maybe laugh at us now. Nothing to laugh about. We've done well in Europe against a bloody good team. But they think they can do it on themselves. You know, go at it then, if that's what they think.
It's never going to change, Derek. As I say, we've spoken about the narrative in Scotland. It's never, ever going to happen. We know exactly what the state of play is. We know that it is down to us. Their record in Europe has been absolutely abysmal. Ours has been excellent over the last few years. So we know 100% any joy that any of the clubs get in here when it comes to rankings and coefficient points and stuff like that is all down to us.
Next thing here, we've been given the green light by Glasgow City Council to sell alcohol in a marquee outside New Edmundston House at the next Old Firm game. Likely going to be no Celtic fans in the stadium anyway, because they're still refusing to take an allocation. It will be for 200 fans only. That's over and above what's in the New Edmundston House anyway. So it's a good step, certainly a good step forward by the council. Obviously, we've still got the sports bar to open up as well. Hopefully, that'll be getting done shortly. Dave, obviously, you and I were at Ibrox not long ago, and there was not even any work started on it yet. So,
yeah,
not sure when that'll be, but a good start anyway with having this marquee.
Yeah, definitely. What we're thinking about, £8 a pint,
probably £16.90 for two. And the last piece of footballing news I've got here is a tribute dinner was held for Jimmy Bell the other day. A number of previous players turned up, including Barry Ferguson, Neil McCann, Alan McGregor, Gordon Jury, Lee Wallace, and many, many more. So it was apparently a great night for all. Great memories of Jimmy Bell and a fit tribute to the man.
Yeah, fantastic stuff by the club and the organisers to do that. Good stuff.
So, Dave, usually at this point of the event, I've got some sort of weird story, but I couldn't find any story this week. However, I went to my next best thing, because, Dave, I don't know if you've heard of the Twitter handle Fesshole.
Yes, I have heard of it, yes.
So for those who are uninitiated, it's obviously people anonymously email in to this Twitter handle and they put stories up, and generally they're pretty funny. Some tragic ones in there, but generally pretty funny. So I've got a wee selection for you tonight, Dave.
Go for it.
In my late 20s, I was seeing 7 different guys. They each had their own night. It all ended when I had to go and see Iron Man 3 5 times in a week.
Okay.
Even the first Iron Man as well.
I know.
My wife is 68 and riddled with dementia. She doesn't know who our kids are anymore. She doesn't know who our sisters are. She barely knows who I am. But of course, she still remembers that affair I had in 1994. And no, she still won't let it go. When I got married, my mother told me to save for an exit fund should the marriage fail. I now have been married for 49 years. The exit fund now stands at £315,000. My husband has no idea.
No.
Wife pressured me into marriage counselling and thinks I hate it, but paying £100 a week for a stranger to validate what I've been saying for years, that her emotional outbursts are 90% of the problem, is the best time and money I've ever spent.
Okay, Derek, I think that's fantastic. I need to get a telephone number.
My dad put my mum's phone in her coffin for her burial. About 3 months later, I thought it would be funny to change her number on his phone to mine, and I text him saying, "Get me out of this fucking box." He didn't see the funny sides and didn't speak to me for almost a year.
Dear, dear.
Split with the missus a few months ago, and she was seeing someone else who she's now moved into her marital home. I still have the Hive heating app on my phone. I keep turning up to the maximum when they go to work. Hope it's cost them a fortune.
Good one.
I'm a bus driver. If I'm having a bad day at work, I will look in the mirror while driving and mutter to myself, "You're all utter cunts, aren't you?" And then tap the brakes twice so they all nod. My wife bought a dash cam for her car. I didn't know it recorded the sound in the car. She now has lots of recordings of me pretending to be interviewed by Sky Sports as a manager of my FIFA team while driving to work.
Oh no. Quality.
I've had diarrhea for 3 years and never saw a doctor. My dog had diarrhea for 7 days and I took him to the vet. He has a wheat allergy. I decided to go to the doctor. I also have a wheat allergy. We both poo normally now. And the last one, I think we can all relate to. I once paid $3.99 to stream a film on Amazon because I couldn't be arsed to get up for the DVD I had on the shelf 15 foot away. Hey.
Oh, DVD, brilliant.
I love that yeah, Twitter handle. Superb. Oh, we'll have more festival confessions if we don't have a normal story back. So, yeah. Dave, a mixed bag in the performances and results, but we've still got a lot to play for. Looking forward to it. I just hope we get players back from injury, get them up to match fitness quick, and we can push on from there for the end of the season.
Yep, my thoughts exactly. I hope that this break just now, we don't get anybody back for the international breaks injured, and we do, you know, manage to utilise this time to get certain players back for us, because there is some massive games. I mean, there's still a treble to play for here, Derek, so this season could be absolutely magnificent for us. So, fingers crossed, you know, things keep going, especially in the league and the cups, at the way that they have been, and you know, that game looming against Celtic on the 7th of April looks as if it's going to be absolutely massive for us. So fingers crossed there. So, but that's still a wee bit to go, isn't it?
Yes. So all that's left to say is thanks for listening and goodbye.
Take care, folks. Bye bye.
And the stadium erupts in red, white, and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.